friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Listener supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Featuring local and independent artists.
Welcome to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here, and Alan Mazurek will hopefully be joining us at some point here a little bit later in the show. But for now, we're going to call it girl power, right? I have the pleasure of having with me today three very special guests, all representing one critically important arm or area of our college, and that is the Office of Student Activities. Yes, you might think, well, the student activities take place in the classroom, don't they? Well, not always, nor should they. In fact, lots of learning to be done through the Office of Student Activities with things outside of the classroom impacting our students here at Henry Ford College in a very, very powerful way. So we are joined by our Director of Student Activities, Ms. Cassandra Fluker, who we have had on our show many, many times in the past. Mandy Earle is joining us as well, who is a not quite a regular yet, Mandy, but we're getting there, right? And a new voice today, Kayla Collins, is joining us, representing the area as well. So rather than get into very specific titles, and I know Cassandra wears many hats also, I'd like to welcome you three ladies to our program today. And I want to have you talk a little bit about your specific area of student activities and what sort of cog of the wheel you play to make sure that that wheel keeps spinning. And just some context for our listeners. You don't have to be a student of Henry Ford College to appreciate, understand, and even connect with the Office of Student Activities, FYI. You could be a parent listening in for a student or a community member that loves hearing about a project that the students are working on and you want to contribute or participate in some way. So this isn't a discussion exclusive to just students on campus. We want everybody to know this information. But some of the events that we're going to be talking about are really meant for students. So we'll make sure we delineate that. But let's get into it. Cassandra, let's start with you. You have been a staple on this campus for many, many years, doing wonderful things in the office. So how do you define your role beyond just the title of the director, the coordinator of this area, this very important aspect of our college?
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Susan. So thank you for inviting my staff and I to speak on student activities for the community. As you said, I'm the Director of Student Activities, and I oversee student club activities, create policies and procedures for the better functioning of the office. And I actually help out in all areas. So I constantly interact with the students, constantly interact with my staff, help out where needed, so to keep the office flowing.
It makes it sound so easy, doesn't she? I love it. So let's jump over. Thank you, Cassandra. Let's jump over to Mandy. And Mandy, oftentimes when we hear your name, it is connected directly to the Hawk's Nest, which is our just absolutely wonderful and so important food pantry on the campus of Henry Ford College. So I know you're going to want to speak to that a little bit, but talk about the sort of the breadth of your role here at the college and officially what we want to call you in your title.
Yes, thank you, Susan. So most people know me as the lady who walks around campus with a cart full of food, taking it to or from the pantry. My role here is I am the student activities associate, and I do oversee our student food pantry, the Hawk's Nest. That is one part of my job. And then I also do a lot of the programming for the students. So that could be the more social type activities that we do, like trivia games, movie nights. It could be more of like health and wellness. We do a wellness series or educational type presentations and events that we do for the students. And then also I organize and coordinate all of the volunteer opportunities that we have for our students, faculty, and staff, such as the MLK Day of Service that we just completed our 30th anniversary on the 16th of this month.
Oh, that's incredible. Congratulations for that. Look forward to hearing a little bit more about how that day of service played out, especially honoring it as the 30th anniversary. That's fantastic. And thank you for all of that running around, Mandy, with that food and everything else that you do. It's so important. And then Kayla Collins is our newest member of this, this entity here in terms of the Office of Student Activities. Kayla, what do they have you doing on a regular basis here? Why are you here? What's your interest? What brought you to this office?
Yeah, so I'm new to Henry Ford College. I just started in mid-September. I am the administrative assistant here, so I am kind of the front face of the office in a lot of ways. As students come in and they say, I'm new to campus and I want to get involved, or if they have any questions, I'm able to talk to them, which is really great. I'm kind of also a contact person for clubs, for club officers who need to submit forms and stay up to date with their own policies, if they need a reserve space for meetings, all that kinds of stuff. And I also do a lot of promotion. So I make flyers, I design our bulletin board, I run our social media. So I do a lot of different fun things, and it's been really great just getting to know everyone on campus and getting to kind of be in my position here.
Excellent. Well, all of the things that every one of you has shared sounds very important, very relevant, and very necessary on a robust campus in a community college setting. It's the community part of I think, the college experience. So when we talk through opportunities for students to get involved, it also seems to me, and what my experience has been, that we're really meeting students where they're at. We're not making sure students are at a certain level before we're willing to talk to them or help them or coordinate things with them. It's really that kind of meeting them when they get here, figuring out their interests, their needs, goals, and so on, and then having somebody, certainly in the group of three here, that can probably speak very, very efficiently to ways to support that student. So in the process of doing that, when Kayla meets somebody for the first time that comes into the office and says, I need some support, I need some help, do we encourage is there a form to fill out? Are there questionnaires? Is there a process by which we kind of decipher what might be in the best interest of the student to give them insight and ideas of involvement? Is it that structured, or is it really more just a very individual one-on-one basis kind of a thing? Who would like to try that one?
It's pretty structured. When the students come in, they often inquire about the clubs that we have on campus or the clubs that exist. So we have what you call a club interest form that we will give students. We ask them to fill out the top of the form with their personal information, such as name and address, and circle the clubs that they're interested in. And normally they would circle maybe 4 or 5. But of course, if they're full-time students, they can't possibly be actively involved in 4 groups. So what I usually tell the students, I have them go to each meeting of the club that they're interested in and see if it's a good fit for them. If it's not a good fit, I tell them to just scratch it off their list. They don't have to attend another meeting of that particular club. So normally they will find maybe 1 club that's a good fit for them, and then they continue throughout the semester being active with that group. And if they don't have time for a club, I usually inform them of the programs that we have going on campus or even online and see if they would like to participate that way. So a number of our students, like I say, they are full-time students. Some of them work part-time, some full-time. So they may have the opportunity to participate in an activity instead of joining a club and meeting on an ongoing basis.
That makes sense. I'm when you were saying that, I was thinking of that, dating myself here, but that Brady Bunch episode when Marcia signs up for like 16 different clubs because she wants to become popular. So she joins everything she could possibly, you know, fit, that ends up doing none of them well. So I appreciate the fact that there are opportunities for those that have maybe are caregivers or working full time or, you know, in some capacity, just very, very busy outside of the school environment, but want to do more than just come to classes, or maybe none of their classes are face-to-face on campus and they want to get that campus experience. So this opportunity of a club or an activity certainly will help, I think, fulfill that aspect of what we consider college life. I know that means something different to everybody. One of the ways to get sort of learn about options is to at least look at a list of what's already available. It's that online as well as in that form that that students will fill out if they physically come and talk to you on campus?
Oh, definitely. They can go to, you know, visit the college's webpage and go to campus sites and clubs and all of the clubs and the descriptions and the advisor name are listed. So they can contact the Office of Student Activities directly, or they can contact the advisor directly and find out the meeting schedule.
Great. Let's take that one step forward and think of a student that maybe has a specific skill set or interest and they want to create a club, for example, and they don't see what they're specifically looking for on the list. How doable is that? And without getting too much into sort of the weeds, what's involved?
Oh, it's very doable. And we always encourage students to, if they don't see something that that interests them, they always can start a group of their own. So they will have to recruit 10 currently enrolled students who are willing to help them form the group, find a full-time or part-time faculty or staff member of HSD, and create a constitution, which sets the operations of their club. So nothing too strenuous. 1, 2, 3, bam. You got a club.
Good. What are some of the clubs that are currently very, very active on campus, at least in membership? And just because, you know, just because a club has a lot of members and another one has fewer doesn't make it any better or worse, just different. But just to give a little bit of the scope of the types of clubs that we have offered here currently on our campus.
Well, we have about maybe 35 student clubs. And they all fall in the category of academic, faith-based, cultural, social, political, and recreational. Oh, and honor societies. So it should be six categories. And I am proud to announce that 3 groups were approved during the fall semester. So we now have a theater club, a pre-health club, and a competitive gaming club. So with our competitive gaming club, they now have 57 members, which is popular at HSD. They were featured in the Dearborn Press and Guide in the middle of December. The president, I believe he's an early college student. He's a great student leader. So he stays in contact with the office, always has something going on with the group. So, in addition to the competitive gaming club, we have National Society of Leadership and Success, which is an honor society and is focused on leadership development. That's pretty popular. I believe we have 100. Mandy, is it 150 new members this year?
I think so. It's right around that number. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really interested in leadership development. Of course, that would help them, beyond HSC. In the workforce and in their personal lives. Phi Theta Kappa is once again active this semester, and that's always popular. Yeah, we have a number of students with high GPAs, and they're always willing to do service, leadership, and scholarship.
Make a good point. I was just going to say, Cassandra, when you're talking about some of these more academic-type clubs, but really clubs in general, how that looks on a resume, in your LinkedIn profile, in your application for a university, et cetera, et cetera. So certainly many of these are meant to entertain and be a social aspect of your life and your experience while here at HFC. But as you indicated, they could certainly positively potentially impact the next steps, correct?
Correct. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Great. Great. When we get into the non-club activities, everything else, basically, besides making a commitment for a club. I know that some of the things that we've got going on are timely, like the MLK Day of Service. Some things we just do every year just for fun because they're popular, and then other new ideas as they come in. I am expecting that a way that students learn about much of this stuff and even the clubs is through the annual, actually biannual Welcome Days event. So I want to take a minute as we're talking through the basically the position of the Office of Student Activities and what's involved in it, in talking through that very fun, you know, few days event that allows our students to see a little bit of everything of what we got. And Welcome Days has been around for a really long time. I don't know if you have dates on that, any of you, but I know it's been going on for a long time and we love participating in that. But in terms of sort of the love connections that are made at an event like Welcome Days, what would you care to share about the purpose and the mission of having this event, which, by the way, takes place next week, right? It's literally starting on Tuesday of next week. So tell us what we can expect and sort of the mindset behind it. Whoever wants to tackle that one. You're making Cassandra do all the work, by the way. So maybe we want to divvy that up a little bit.
Well, I'll let Mandy and Kayla chime in. But Welcome Back Days, yes. I mean, it has been here for many, many years. I've been here for 19 years and it was in place when I came on board at HSC. But of course, over the years, I have grown. It has grown, and I revamped it over the years to make it better. But that's one of our first big events at Henry Ford, and it's designed to introduce new and returning students to the services and programs that we have that we have at HSC, and a way to get them involved on campus. So the event will take place next week, January 24th and 25th, from 11 to 1 in our Student Center, which is Building M. And it's not only open to currently enrolled students, it's also open to students who are thinking about enrolling at HSC. So they can come and see the different things that we have to offer.
Okay. Mandy, what's your favorite part of Welcome Days? Because it sounds like a lot of the fun stuff falls, you know, on your desk, aside from the very, very important things like the Hawk's Nest, but you talked about trivia nights and you talked about some of those kind of fun, silly things. So what do you like about it and what are we planning for this time around?
I think it is probably, there's two things I really like about it, is the fun stuff. So it gives students an opportunity to see that you can enjoy college and have fun, and it's not always just about, you know, going to class and doing your homework. Obviously, that comes first. Make sure you're doing your homework before you come to our events. But there is a lot of fun, and there is a lot of meeting other students and making those connections with other students and making friends and just, like, growing in those ways as well. So I think the second part of it is getting them connected to other people at campus. College is a lot more fun when you have friends that are here, you have other people that you're connected with here, more reasons to come to campus always makes your college experience more enjoyable. So that's like the second thing that I really enjoy about it. And this year, Kayla, do you want to talk about the activities that we are doing this year?
Sure. So yeah, on Tuesday the 24th, that's going to be our Student Services and Resources Fair. So that day is really focused on having different areas of campus that support our students there to be able to talk to new and returning students and make sure that they can actually connect with any services that they need. But besides that, we're going to be having John Rush, who is a professional musician. He's going to be leading karaoke for our students, which will be really fun. We're going to have a performance from the HFC Chorus and the Blue Fusion Group. We'll have caricature artists who will be available to draw some fun caricature pictures of anyone who wants that. And then, of course, we're going to be having different community groups, so they will have tons of handouts and candies and free snacks and all kinds of fun stuff there. And then on Wednesday, the 25th, that is the student clubs fair. And so that will really give the different clubs on campus a chance to showcase who they are to different students, kind of as a way to recruit new members, but also just give some information and connect to other people on campus. Some activities on that day, we will be having a photo booth, which is always a huge hit. There's a bunch of fun props that you can put on and dress up and take pictures with all your friends. There's going to be different activities from the clubs. Like, I know there's going to be a video gaming station, a tie-dye station, possibly like henna tattoos, stuff like that. The HFC Chorus and Blue Fusion are going to perform on that day as well. And then we're also going to be doing like a street sign making activity. So you'll actually be able to walk away with something that you get to keep and remember the day forever. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. And then again, this is Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Student Center building, Building M, right in the pavilion. Yes?
Yes. One thing I do want to note is the street signs activity is actually going to be going a little bit longer, so more opportunity for students to participate in that. It's going to go from 10 to 2.
Great. So. Do we need to
register? That's always a favorite.
Yeah, oh, it sounds like so much fun. Do we need to register for any of this stuff as students, or can we just kind of show up?
No, it's open for anyone to just show up during those times and participate in all the activities, talk with the different clubs and the different offices and community groups that are on campus.
Excellent. Let me remind our listeners today on the WHFR Journal, I'm joined with the power group of the Student Activities Office here at Henry Ford College, Cassandra Fluker, Mandy Earle, and Kayla Collins, each representing a different yet complementary aspect of this, what this team needs to be able to do and bring every day to make sure that they're interacting and engaging with students as can make such a huge impact and positive difference in the wellness and the success of student life here at Henry Ford College, both in the classroom and outside of it. We focus a lot on the term, sort of in social circles, on the term self-care and wellness. We want to try to be good to ourselves as humans, and as students, there's this tendency to take on just a ton of work academically and not necessarily have the means by which to sort of blow off the steam or feel that others are in the same situation when you've got a lot of extra pressure, anxiety, or whatever going on. It really seems like some of the stuff that we're talking about here is probably really good for us, as well as fun and interesting and exciting and beneficial in other ways. Anything you'd like to share, any of you, based on sort of that topic of how getting involved isn't a guilty pleasure, but probably a really good way for a well-rounded experience, sort of emotionally and mentally as well?
Susan, I do a lot of past presentations, and what I tell students is that a college education is half academic and half campus involvement, and one without the other, your college education is incomplete. So involvement is essential to your college education, and it's best if all students get involved to get something out of it, because it can benefit any and everybody. Like I say, emotionally, mentally. We even offer a wellness series each semester to help students with their self-care, mental health, things of that nature. Yeah.
But you also hear about, you know, employers are interested in students that are well-rounded and students that have those soft skills. So it's not just everything you're learning in the classroom. It's, can you communicate with people? Do you know how to interact with other people? Can you communicate with folks in different cultures, different backgrounds? So you're getting a lot of those skills when you're participating in these activities. When you're taking on a leadership role in a club, you're learning how to lead a group of people, how to manage them, how to coordinate and organize events. So those are all skills that are going to help you outside of that club and when you move on to a university, when you move on to your future career. So those are things that, yeah, you're having fun while you're doing it, but it's also helping you down the road as well.
Excellent.
I think too, it's important to remember that they're not just students, they're people too. They're full human beings. And so, like any of us, if we just only work and only do one thing, you're going to get burnt out, and that's not going to be sustainable in the long run. And so it's important for them to take care of themselves and do what they enjoy. And I think allowing them to have that outlet will help them be more successful, help them be happier. And that's a part of their educational experience as well.
Thank you. Well put. We like to talk about successes. The MLK Day of Service always typically is a great success and a way to honor the legacy of Dr. King at the same time as doing some wonderful things for the community, the current community. Update on that and anything else you'd like to share as we get ready to wrap up. We've got a few minutes left. So let's talk about what's working really well right now and then do another invitation for Welcome Days coming up this coming week.
MLK Day went really well. It was on the 16th, and this year it was our 30th anniversary of doing this event with the University of Michigan Dearborn. It was very successful. We had over 400 students, faculty, and staff, and community members who registered for the event. We're still sorting through everything and all the projects that were completed to get final numbers, but we did have 13 different projects that everyone was working on, either on campus over at U of M Dearborn, out in the community at locations like Forgotten Harvest and Cleaners, and then also we had some folks working from home on remote projects, making fleece blankets, greeting cards that we're going to send out, and also knitting hats and scarves. So very successful.
Excellent. And you incorporated the remote opportunity as well. We recognize that not everyone is physically here on campus, again, all the time or even at all. So it's nice to have that option also. And when we talk about other aspects of getting involved, I know there are just probably more things that we could mention that we're just going to forget in a little while because they're a ways off or something. Is there, I think, one repository where we can find information about what the next activity is, what the next, you know, wellness event is about, the next, you know, Welcome Days? Where do we find that stuff?
I was just going to say one resource is always the HSD website. We try to make sure that there's information on there, getting flyers out on campus. And then Kayla does an amazing job of keeping our social media very active and getting information up there. So I will let her kind of speak to that about the three different social media accounts that we have.
Sure. Yeah. So the student activities office, we have a Instagram, we have a Facebook page, and then we also recently created a Facebook group for students. Our Instagram and Facebook handle is HFC Student Activities. And that's where we will post events. We'll showcase any special clubs, anything going on. We just try to keep our students connected. And then the Facebook group is actually called the Henry Ford College Student Community, and that's really a space for students themselves to get involved with each other. We saw a need for them to be able to start their own kind of discussion threads and maybe share ideas if they wanted to swap textbooks with each other, have their own promotion of their clubs, stuff like that. So we have that group available for them to be able to talk to each other there. We post all of our events on our social media accounts. I also send out a newsletter to students with some of those events, but we also try and make sure it's always on the HFCC events page just so they can find it there as well.
Yeah, and Susan, a number of our activities are open to the community. So if the community members would like to have be notified of what's coming up, they can email us at studentactivity@hfcc.edu, and they will get the newsletter on a weekly basis.
Excellent. Thank you. Student activities at hfcc.edu.
Yes.
That's a good one to remember. Yeah. And then the campus life link on the HFC webpage as well to connect directly for learning about more about these events. I want to make sure that we speak just briefly again on the success of the Hawk's Nest, because it is just so important and so necessary in this community. Mandy, any update that you'd care to share? And then what needs we might ask our community to help support?
Yeah, so I did just want to update that this semester we are open an additional day. So it will be open Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We do still strongly encourage students to make an appointment. Unfortunately, I still am trying to find one more student worker to help cover some of the hours. So I would hate for a student to come over there on one of those few hours that I don't have a student worker and it not be open. So if you just email HawksNest at hawkmail.hfcc.edu, we will get right back to you and get you registered to use the pantry and get you scheduled for an appointment to pick up. And any student that's currently enrolled is allowed to use the pantry and get food and personal care items, and all of it is free for our students.
Thank you. The Hawk's Nest located in the administration building, building L, still currently this semester?
Yes. L-138.
Okay, great. We like to say the L building, and L stands for love. That's the way, that's what I say anyway. Some of the administrators may know, I'm sure they all agree. When we talk about needs for making sure that all of the important work that you're all doing continues to happen, what can the community do to support student activities? In what ways? What are the asks right now?
Well, we are always accepting donations for our pantry. So either that can be shelf-stable food, such as cereal, oatmeal, canned fruit, canned vegetables, soups. We always need a lot of soups or chili-type meals during the winter. Any type of shelf-stable or personal care items, shampoos, toothpaste, toothbrushes. Always accepting those donations. And we also accept monetary donations through the HFC Foundation. So if they went to the hfcc.edu website and search foundation, they can make a donation online through the foundation office.
And a number of community members, they have attended Henry Ford College, so they are alumni. So I personally would like to ask them to tell their children, grandchildren, what a gem HFC is, and to get involved on our campus.
Right. I think we're going to leave you with the last statement there, Cassandra. You put it very well. It is a gem, and we do want people to get involved because there's so much to offer. There's so much to do, and these three gals are helping to make sure that it goes well and quite seamlessly. Ladies, we look forward to seeing you Tuesday and Wednesday and or Wednesday at the Welcome Days, and we encourage our students to get involved in whatever capacity you can. There is something for everyone here, absolutely. So remember these couple of things. First of all, hfcc.edu, and go to Campus Life or Student Activities at hfcc.edu, and there's multiple ways of connecting with all of this information. Kayla, you did great. We welcome you. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Happen to stop into the office, you will get to meet Kayla, which will be a wonderful experience, I'm sure. And to Mandy and Cassandra, again, keep up the great work. We're so pleased and blessed to have this team doing amazing things for our students. We all see them at different points in their careers, at different points in their days, and we know that this is making a positive impact in their life here at HFC. So we thank you, and we look forward to continued success with all of the things that the Student Activities Office is doing. So thanks, ladies.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Certainly. Yes, thank you for your support always.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you. We've got more on the way here. This is the WHFR Journal on 89.3 FM. Please stay with us.
Listening to the sounds of Mars this week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah Al-Ahmed of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Have you heard the recordings from the Red Planet? After decades of effort to put a microphone on Mars, we can finally listen to the sound of the Martian wind, thanks to NASA's Perseverance rover and the teams who worked to make its two microphones a reality. In a moment, you'll hear my interview with Jason Achilles, a musician with a passion for space who used his audio prowess to help put one of the first successful microphones on Mars. Stick around for What's Up with Bruce Betts and this week's Space Trivia Contest. In space news, Virgin Orbit's first launch from the UK hit a major snag after it lifted off from Spaceport Cornwall on January 9th. Virgin Orbit, not to be confused with its sister company Virgin Galactic, is a company that provides launch services for small satellites. Their Launcher 1 rocket suffered an anomaly sometime after it was released from its carrier plane. It was supposed to deploy 9 satellites, but sadly, none of them made it into orbit. We aren't yet sure what caused the anomaly, but hopefully we'll know more soon. Meanwhile, in the United States, Representative Frank Lucas has been named chair to the U.S. House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Lucas, a Republican from Oklahoma, has served as ranking member of the Science Committee since 2019. You can learn more about these stories and glimpse a beautiful image of frost around a crater on Mars captured by the European Space Agency's Mars Express Orbiter in the January 13th edition of our weekly newsletter, The Downlink. Read it or subscribe to have it sent to your inbox for free every Friday at planetary.org/downlink. In 1996, Planetary Society co-founder Carl Sagan wrote a letter to NASA, urging the agency to include a microphone on their next Mars mission. It began a 25-year-long campaign here at the Planetary Society to try to get a microphone on Mars. There were several attempts to make it happen over the years, but it wasn't until the triumphant moment that NASA's Perseverance rover touched down on the Red Planet in 2021 that the dream finally became a reality. Perseverance included not one, but two microphones on board. The SuperCam mic, which records the rover's laser zaps on the Martian rocks, among other things, and the Entry, Descent, and Landing, or EDL microphone, which was meant to capture audio from the rover's landing, along with other sounds. Unfortunately, the EDL microphone didn't successfully record the landing noises, but the two mics have returned a wealth of Martian and rover noises to Earth. My guest this week is Jason Achilles, a self-proclaimed extraterrestrial audio engineer and president of Zandef Dexit Incorporated. He's a composer, producer, and musician whose passion for space led him on a mission to partner with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, to make the EDL Mars microphone a reality. Thanks for joining me, Jason.
I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's really cool to get to talk to you again, because the last time I saw you in the real world, it was actually at Astronomy on Tap in Pasadena, and you were rocking out on a guitar, and it was right after a really long day for me. You know, it was the 240th American Astronomical Society, so to cap off that adventure, it was really cool to just chill out and watch you play your guitar.
Yeah, I guess to explain to people, there's a Caltech holds an astronomy lecture every month in Pasadena. My band plays in between the speakers, and it's a very cool experience, and it was great that you came.
And I was kind of very struck by your music style. You call it, what, cosmic rock, right?
Other people call it that, and then they ask me, and I'm like, I don't know, that sounds as good. Yeah, cosmic space rock or something. It's all instrumental. It's definitely got some atmospheric sort of Pink Floyd kind of qualities, and then there's more upbeat, like, I don't know, Jeff Beck meets Stevie Wonder-ish kind of, I don't know. As long as people like it and buy the t-shirts, I'm happy.
Well, I definitely enjoyed it. I kept thinking, you know, I need to pick up that guitar and learn more. But, you know, you've managed to not just play music, but find a way to apply what you learned from your musical career to something that you're very passionate about, which is space exploration. And that's part of why I wanted to talk to you, because ever since I learned that I was going to be the new host of Planetary Radio, I've been making these schemes to talk to you about this, because I feel like that's so relatable and inspiring that you went from rock star to this Mars microphone program. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, I tell people I basically have started an aerospace career just to pay for the music one, which is honestly kind of sort of how it's been working out. Mm-hmm. It's been going pretty well. Basically, I sort of cold called NASA in the middle of, I think it was like summer 2016, something like that. And I'd heard that there was going to be a microphone flow in a couple months. And so I pitched myself as sort of an audio consultant and said, like, hey, if you guys need anybody, I'm in. And it turned out they actually did. And so then I had to put together a team of engineers to basically do the more technically specific aspects of that study that I didn't know how to do. I understood enough about what I'd seen on the specs and thought, okay, I think I can be of value here. But then how do you apply fluid dynamics equations to acoustic research and stuff like that? I had no idea. So I've got an idea now, but I had them teach me as mm-hmm. we went through it. So I found these couple of brilliant audio engineers, Brad Avinson and Cesar Garcia. So we got hired beginning of 2017. We did a 2-month study. Dave Gruhl, who hired us at JPL, he was our supervisor at JPL, and he was the one spearheading everything. And he had a couple ideas. There was a company that had released this new product that was a good contender for various technical reasons. But actually, the microphone I'm talking to you on now is a flight analog of the Mars EDL mic. So this is the exact same microphone. This was one of the test models. This is a flight analog. This is a DPA 4006 capsule into an MMA preamp, which is the exact same thing that was flown on Perseverance. They had a few very minor modifications, but acoustically, it's identical. We did have to process the audio a bit to remove some background noise, but the actual sound is untweaked, as it were.
Yeah, and it's absolutely astonishing. I mean, I know it's just kind of the sound of wind and things like that, but I mean, getting sound from the surface of another world is so mind-blowing.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
I had this deep emotional moment listening to it.
It's funny because audio is discarded very readily as scientific validity sometimes. I think people sort of think of audio, maybe the way they think of a painting or something. It's like this arbitrary, you know, collection of, it's more thought of as being beautiful than useful, right? You know, audio is tricky. There's a lot of work we've done to make sure that everything we're doing is very authentic, you know, with how we're treating this stuff. I tell people, if you want to understand the importance of audio, just put earplugs in and walk around for a day, and you'll rapidly realize how much more frustrating it is just not hearing normal audio cues. I don't know. We think of it as enjoyment, but it really is. There's a reason it's a sensory system.
Absolutely. There's so much that we can learn kind of, you know, about Mars, because the conditions there in the air, chemically and the atmospheric density, it's very different from what we have here on Earth. And, you know, how does that impact the sounds that we're hearing from this microphone?
You know, people would ask me before this thing landed, you know, okay, assuming this thing works, what do you expect to hear? And the analogy I like to give is that it's sort of like if you were walking through the middle of Death Valley, what would you hear? You would hear yourself walking through the middle of Death Valley and not much else, you know, and you hear a little bit of atmospheric stuff. But really, to me, I think the exciting part is hearing the sound of your own footsteps on Mars, except in this case, it's rover wheels. But, you know, one day it will be our footsteps. And then the audio becomes more useful. You know, if you're working on the surface, if you're drilling something or you're in loose terrain and you can hear these things, it's going to increase mobility. It'll increase your mental stability because you can actually, it's one of the few sensory awarenesses that we can give you a pretty accurate perception of. You know, you're never going to smell Mars, not really. You know, you're never going to feel a gust of Martian wind on your face, but you can hear the audio. We can treat the audio in such a way where it's absolutely what you would hear if you were to, you know, hold your breath, not, you know, depressurize. It was horribly dry and it was sticking your head out the window on Mars, but it'll be one of the few sensory experiences that will be accurate. You'll never feel the unfiltered sunlight touch your face on Mars the way you do when you walk out your porch. It's a different experience, you know? Audio is one of the few things we can give you that will be absolutely correct.
If you could, if you had, you know, infinite resources, what other worlds would you want to send microphones to?
Well, I lobbied really hard to become part of the Dragonfly mission to Titan. My understanding is that they are working to include an audio component. I offered my services most diligently, but they're basically like, nah, we got this. I am working with some other folks on a couple different missions for Venus, and we're going to see if we can get some audio going there, which is not the first time. The Russians actually did do this back right in 1981.
And the Venera missions?
Venera 13, yeah, had a microphone, which I would guess that mic that they flew on that thing probably weighs close to what the whole probe is going to way for like Russian 70s engineering, everything. I think weren't the probes like 5 tons or something? Like insanely heavy. And the microphone, it's really hard to find any literature about this. As far as I can tell, it was just all completely solid stainless steel. I'm sort of guessing based on pictures I saw, it looked like it was maybe about the size of a large beer can or something, like solid metal, you know, and we're hoping to send something much similar to this. And I've been working with Rocket Lab, who's sending a private mission there. And then there's the Da Vinci probe to Venus. We'll see if we can get something going there.
Oh, that's so exciting. I would love to hear the sounds of Venus.
Those are both atmospheric probes, so they're basically falling very fast through the atmosphere, right? What I really would like to do is get something flight qualified so that next time we send hot air balloons, it can float, you know, in that sort of 50-kilometer high weather balloons, basically. And then you can really just listen and maybe, you know, if you can hear the thunder from those lightning storms, the theorized lightning storms on Venus, something like that would be, I think, just the coolest thing ever.
Any sound from a lightning storm on any other world would be amazing, but you just know it would be terrifying on Venus, because everything is terrifying on Venus.
Everything's terrifying. Venus wants to kill you even more than Mars, and Mars really wants to kill you.
It's so exciting that we're at a place in time when we can even begin to imagine and to build these missions that are going to be, you know, not just landing on a place like one of Saturn's moons, you know, like Titan, but sending back audio and video as well. It's yeah. Next level. And every time we take one of these steps, it feels like, well, of course we were going to do that. But no, it's mind-blowing to me every time.
People have no concept of how hard this stuff is. It's just very cool.
Right. And your original spec for this microphone was very different. You had to go with these kind of off-the-shelf components. But is there anything from your original design that you really wish you could have had on this mission?
Well, the actual capsule itself was the identical.
Cool.
Yeah, we would have bought this capsule anyway and integrated into a custom preamplification system. The only thing that we would have been very cool that we had built into our initial design is that, you know, there was going to be a second mic of a different design, mainly for, you know, so if one fails, hopefully the other one works because they're different technologies and being affected differently by the environment. But ideally, if they both worked, you'd have a built-in stereo mic. We did put together that one stereo audio, but that was kind of a fluke that even got recorded. And it technically isn't stereo, but it doesn't sound very good compared to what it'll sound like when we do proper stereo on Mars. It will happen, but it would have been wonderful to have that capability the first time around.
I know that once your time working at JPL kind of ended, you were still seeking ways to still be involved in space exploration. And you're working on a whole new project now, right? What's going on with that?
The whole idea for recording audio on Mars or any other planet came from was actually initially wanting to see the sky crane maneuver, but from a remote perspective. And so the initial idea was to take a camera, and as the sky crane maneuver was happening, we would eject this little camera ball with a camera inside it and a protective housing, basically, and it would be recording from before you ejected it. It would hit the ground, bounce a little bit, but not too far, and you'd be able to watch the sky crane maneuver, but it's a totally different thing when you can be looking at it from a short distance away. You know, it's like, you know, watching a rocket launch if you're on the rocket versus, you know, standing next to it. At the time, the friend of mine that I shared that with at JPL was like, it's too close to the mission. There's no way they're going to go for this kind of wacky new technology that nobody's done before. But then we're like, well, what about audio? And then it turned out while we were having that discussion, NASA was planning to include audio. So it all worked out. But I went back to that idea a few years ago while we were waiting for Perseverance to land and got together a team of this engineering company named Honeybee Robotics. They're an engineering company in Altadena, right down the street there from JPL. And I pitched this idea to them and they loved it. And so they got behind it and sunk some money into supporting it. And we built an early prototype and then we were able to get funded through NASA for a little over $500,000 for an early development grant, which allowed us to test it on an actual rocket flight, but on Earth, like a suborbital rocket test. Mm-hmm. And so we did that about a year ago, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the footage of that in the Mojave Desert, right?
Yeah.
It was really wild to just kind of see, you know, these little GoPros and balls essentially just kind of jettisoning off the side of rockets and then just looking back at the landing. I mean, anytime you get one of those moments when you can like see a spacecraft doing its thing, that's just wild. And I imagine what it would be like to just watch a lunar landing with one of these things.
I want the current 5-year-old future astronauts of this world to see that, you know, and like, wow, you know, they just I want that to be normalized, you know. It's like, oh, another rocket landing on another planet that we get to watch. Yeah, that's the point. That's what we're doing now. We're basically looking to get more funding to get this thing flight qualified for space travel. There's a lot of private landers going to the moon in the next few years. There will be, you know, bigger missions to Mars coming soon. And so we want on board, and we'll see what happens.
Just one more way to make space more accessible and exciting for everyone, you know.
I think exciting is, yeah, that's the key, right? I mean, probably you guys are all like this, you know. A lot of engineers in the aerospace world are like this too, where you say, like, well, when did you get excited in space? And it's like, well, they were like about 5, 6 years old. And it was something, depending on how old they are, maybe it was the Apollo landings, or maybe it was the space shuttle, or this stuff is, you know, people are like, well, why do we send people to other worlds? And like, because it's inspiring, you know, and why would you not do something like that? Yeah, it costs a few bucks, but so does a lot of other way dumber stuff that we do. So,
and, you know, yes, it's money. And yes, that money goes into a lot of jobs here on Earth. But how do you put a price tag on that level of hope and inspiration and international collaboration? I mean, I was 6 years old when I decided that I wanted to dedicate my life to space.
See, there you go. 5, 6 years old. Boom. And here you are, you know, educating, inspiring kids and adults. And yeah, how do you put a price tag on it? I mean, I guess you could work it out in terms of, like, you know, tax revenue and support, public support and funding for things. But, you know, I mean, nobody says it better than Carl Sagan, right? And he talks about us being a nomadic species by definition. And he says this much more poetically than I do. You know, if we didn't have the intrinsic desire to explore, we would never have survived this long. Like, exploration is a necessary fundamental part of our existence, just the same as procreation. You know, you can't stay sedentary as a species. You know, we're exercising our evolutionarily implied right to explore, you know, and this time we don't have to subjugate anybody or step on anybody's heads, or, you know, maybe there's some microbes that might be a little mad at us, but for the first time, humanity can exercise these feelings of exploration and, you know, you could even say conquest of this new terrain, but without actually doing anything terrible to other humans, mm-hmm. You know, and there's something really, I think, deeply honorable about that level of exploration, you know, and taking a lot of technologies that were developed for warfare, you know, rocketry and all these things, and putting them towards exploration and science and imagination. And it's good stuff. Good. Go humans.
Well said. Just personally, I'd like to thank you for the role that you played in bringing us Mars microphones and helping bring to life this thing that Carl Sagan wanted back, you know, a few years after our founding. I think he would have been really excited to listen to the sounds of Mars, and that's a thing now. We get to look forward to a future where that's just a thing now. It's amazing.
People should do themselves a favor and just go to YouTube and Google Carl Sagan message to Mars. Mm-hmm. And if you're not tearing up at the end of that, you might want to see a therapist, because it's really, and it was recorded the same year he died. I mean, that's a true poet and science communicator saying all the things that we've been stumbling through. But it really is beautiful. And he outlines it all pretty well. And thank you for doing this. I mean, science communication is so vital now, and now's the right time to inspire all these kids, you know?
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that there's a whole new generation of kids out there that are getting excited about space.
I'll tell you, I've been the last couple of years with all this going on with the Mars Audio, I've spoken to a lot of classrooms and a lot of young kids, and space is just, it seems to be a level of cool that even like jaded high schoolers can't really turn away from, which is pretty impressive. You know, like, I think anything less than an astronaut, they're like, yeah, you know, but astronaut still wins.
Well, making more astronauts one recording at a time.
Heck yeah.
Well, thanks for being with me, Jason. I really appreciate it. And hopefully I'll hear more from you in the future when some other cool, amazing microphone gets put on another world. Thanks so much, Jason.
You can hear the extended version of my interview with Jason Achilles, the rock star who helped make the Mars entry, descent, and landing microphone a reality, along with a bonus segment on how to see a comet later this month in the podcast and online version of this show at planetary.org/radio or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. And now it's time for What's Up with Bruce Betts. I am joined once more by the ever amazing Bruce Betts. Welcome back, Bruce.
Hello, incredible Sarah.
So, Bruce, what's up?
Well, planets coming together. Venus and Saturn gonna snuggle up next to each other, but they're low in the western horizon shortly after sunset. Venus looking super bright like it does. Saturn looking yellowish, and they will get closer until the 22nd, and then they will grow apart with Saturn slipping out of sight and Venus coming up higher and being with us for several months of me telling you, hey, it's super bright Venus over low in the west in the early evening, although it'll get higher. And if you follow a line from those guys up, you'll get to Jupiter looking bright, and follow that line across to almost the other side of the sky, and high up above, you'll find Mars, which is making a nice pairing with Aldebaran, the reddish star in Taurus, with Mars being the brighter one for now anyway. It continues to dim as it gets farther away from the Earth. And I was just outside in between torrential rainstorms and back in the normal clear skies of Southern California last night, and the winter constellations are looking lovely in the evening. We've got Orion and all of its friends up high in the evening, so check those out as well. All right, we move on to this week in space history. 1986, Voyager 2 flies past Uranus, giving us our one and only spacecraft flyby so far of Uranus and its friends. By friends, I mean moons and rings. Well, you get it. 2006, headed to the outer solar system, another spacecraft launches New Horizons off towards Pluto and Arrakoth and deep, deep space. And so that's our This Week in Space History this week.
To this day, I still encounter people that have no idea that we flew by Pluto and took images of it. So
no, it's actually the outline of the Disney character Pluto. Let's go on to Random Space Fact. So I just want to mention, for those who aren't familiar with how important explosive bolts are in space exploration, it just sounds terrifying, but these pyrotechnic systems, or pyros, are on pretty much every rocket and spacecraft out there to separate things. So I know the Perseverance and Curiosity had 76 pyros that had to successfully blow to break the connections at the right times as they landed. They're just everywhere. They're omnipresent, these little explosives inside bolts and nuts to make them break at the right time. I just think it's cool, and I want to make sure the world knew.
Yeah, what's interesting about space exploration is that there are so many ways that things can explode, and only a few of them are the good ones, but they're the ones that we need to actually do the thing.
Yeah, these are very small. They're just enough. They're very localized shape to break apart a connection holding a rocket down, holding fairings on, or holding upper stage thingies to lower stage thingies. That's the technical term. All right, we go on to the trivia question. I asked you about an old-timey video game that was related to the solar system in such an important way. I asked you, what planetary system was the setting for the majority of the original Doom video game? How'd we do?
We did really well, actually. Better than expected. It took me quite a while to go through just the massive amounts of people that came in for the trivia contest this week. Of course, people who are gamers, are fans of old video games, will know that the original Doom video game was actually set on Mars. Or rather, I think it was partially set on one of its moons. Phobos, is that correct?
Yes, it was mostly on Phobos, I believe some on Deimos, and parts of the games I never got to, but I believe it was a space marine. I don't know, that's usually the thing, stationed on Mars, who went up to Phobos, and of course his entire group got killed, and he had to work his way for some reason through level after level of hideous monsters, which is totally the way Phobos is.
Totally. But the dice have spoken, and this week we have two winners. First winner is Jean-Marc Bonnard from Lausanne, Switzerland. And winner number two is Tim Johnson from Walnut Creek, California, who wrote in, longtime listener, first time caller. Classic. There are two things I loved in my childhood in the 90s, outer space and video games, which I relate to a lot. So I hope both Jean-Marc and Tim Johnson enjoy their beautiful images of Matt Kaplan that are signed by him. Matt Kaplan, of course, Planetary Radio's creator and former host. We also had a bunch of different messages come in from people, many of them gaming related, but I did really like this one. It's from longtime listener Mel, briefly Frogger Master Powell from Sherman Oaks, California, who said, in law school X years ago, a bunch of us went to a Westwood Village arcade one evening, and for about 2 hours, while surrounded by teens, I had the high score on Frogger. Still a career and life highlight.
Wow, that is.
We also got a message from Neil Ashelman from Bettendorf, Iowa, who says, for the first time, ad astra, Sarah. Congrats on a wonderful first episode, and thanks for including me in the audio welcome. It was a treat. If anybody out there hasn't listened to my first show that came out on January 4th, we added a cute compilation of all the wonderful audio messages that we got from people who called into our hotline. So thank you, Neil. I really enjoyed your message and all of the other messages from people who called in. All right. I think it's time for this week's space trivia question.
All right. Speaking of sounds from space, whose voice was the first to be broadcast from space? Whose voice was the first to be broadcast from space? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
We'll see how many people get this one right. And this week we will be selecting two winners, and the prize is a NASA International Space Station 2023 calendar. And of course, by the time you receive it, January will probably be over, but there are still 11 more months in this trip around the sun for you to use the calendar. But if you would like to join the Space Trivia Contest for this week, you have until Wednesday, January 25th at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us your answer.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about your favorite date on a calendar. Thank you, and good night.
That was Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. We've reached the end of this week's episode of Planetary Radio, but we'll be back next week with Scott Bolton, the principal investigator for NASA's Juno mission to Jupiter. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by our Mars-crazed members. Mark Hilverda and Ray Paoletta are our associate producers. Andrew Lucas is our audio editor. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. And until next week, Ad Astra.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.